National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
The Amazon Synod concluded October 26th, and the final document voted upon by the Synod Fathers included paragraphs on the female diaconate, married priest, and an Amazon Rite liturgy. The Register's Rome correspondent Edward Penton joins us to discuss the final document and what happens next. Then we take up the theme of married priest with Register columnist Father Carter Griffin, who is rector of St. John Paul II Seminary in Washington, D.C., and who recently penned the book Why Celibacy. I'm Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register. I'm going solo again this week while my co-host Matthew Bunsen finds his way back to Washington, D.C. after a whole month in Rome. In Rome, more than 180 bishops gathered in October to discuss the pastoral care for the church in the Amazon region. And, of course, as the synod concluded, they voted on a document, which they presented to the Holy Father. And, of course, in that document, you've probably already heard, much of the controversy that surrounded the synod ended up in the document. Here with us to talk about that document is Edward Penton. Hi, Edward.
Hi, Jeanette.
So, Edward, of course, these three topics that I mentioned in the introduction, the female diaconate, the married priesthood, and the Amazon rite, which is a rite of the liturgy, they each have their own paragraph and were voted upon, and it passed by the two-thirds majority in this final document. Could you walk through what exactly is said about each of those just briefly here?
Sure. Well, the female diaconate is not really anything concrete in that. It's simply opening or reopening a commission that was started by Pope Francis in 2016, and which concluded 3 years later. And Pope Francis actually said in his closing address that he wants to reopen this because of this paragraph which passed. It didn't pass by a huge amount. It kind of scraped through like the other two issues. It wasn't given a solid, resounding, unanimous vote, but it did pass, of course, the two-thirds, which is what it needed. And so Pope Francis has really taken that on, and he said that he will reopen this commission, add a couple of new members to it, and then see where it takes us. But that's that one. Then going on to the ordination of married men issue, that was quite clear in stating that the Synod Fathers had agreed to propose to establish criteria dispositions on the part of a competent authority to set up basically a facility where married men in the Amazon can be ordained priests and to carry out some of the sacraments, celebrate some of the sacraments. It would be only from a permanent diaconate, so they wouldn't just be taken from families and so forth and just ordained priests, but they would actually have a certain amount of formation. And this is in order to bring the Eucharist and the sacraments to remote areas in the Amazon where they just don't have access to them. There's very remote areas where some of the people haven't received the sacraments for two years or so. So that's that. And that was passed, also only just scraped by as well. It got two-thirds, but only just.
And then the Amazon rite, that was the thing that kind of surprised me the most, that it ended up in the document. What exactly are they proposing?
Yes. Well, they're proposing what they say is an elaboration of an Amazonian rite that expresses liturgical, theological, disciplinary, and spiritual patrimony of the Amazon. Now, this was put forward partly because they felt, obviously, there was a need for an Amazonian rite, but it was also pushed, I think, by certain members of the Synod to try and contain the ordination of married men, the viri probati it's called, and to contain it within an Amazonian rite so that it wouldn't actually become a sort of universal thing. It would be limited to the region, rather like the Eastern rites, the Oriental rites in the Church, and rather like the Anglican Ordinariate. So it was a way of keeping that in check. But of course, already we hear that other churches, like the German Church, obviously like this, and probably try to apply it to their own church in Germany.
Right. So I was going to ask you what the response has been. I know I've seen, I guess, the fears of people beforehand, the people that we've heard, especially in our audience, you know, seem to be coming to play. But how about the Synod Fathers and those there in Rome surrounding the Synod? How have they reacted?
Well, it's interesting that Bishop Erwin Kreutler, who is really one of the masterminds behind the Synod, he's a veteran missionary who's been in the Amazon. He's Austrian-born, but been in the Amazon for 40 years or so. And he's been really behind this, and he supports married clergy. He supports, actually, women priests. And so he was delighted, he said, by this. He said he was happy. I spoke to him just after the vote, and he said it's very much as we expected, and that he actually said it was a step to a new epoch, not only in the church, but in the world. So the sign that he was very happy with it, I think, shows you that this is a push not just for the Amazon, but it is a push beyond that. And and the German church also were very happy with it. And they're particularly happy, I think, with the female ordinariate. They see that not as Cardinal Marx said at a press conference after the final document was released, to say that it wasn't. They weren't thinking about deaconesses as in the early church, where they were basically carried out the same role as a nun today or a sister today. But they actually see it as part of ordination. And so that makes it very different and makes it really enter into the realm of priesthood. So
that's what's held it. Yeah. That's what's held it up. I mean, that's a doctrinal change. It's not a it's not simply a change in practice. That's a pretty serious serious move. So sure we'll hear a lot more about that. Joan Desmond's been working on a story about the women diaconate that was published late this week. So Edward, really, I mean, you said this is what we expected, you know, at least the Germans and the Austrians that you spoke of, these bishops, this is what they expected. Are you surprised by anything in the Synod document?
Well, I think not on those issues, because they were kind of expected. And as people have also made it quite clear, and you can see it just by looking at the makeup of the Synod, it was very much preordained in a way. It was predetermined. The people were chosen because they would vote for these. There was very, very little resistance to them because of the people that they put in there. And they weren't elected by the bishops' conferences this time, because it's a special assembly. So they were all handpicked, basically. They were bishops from the Amazon, but they were all chosen because they were from the Amazon, but I think also because they knew they would vote for these things. But also that the Pope had his own choices, and almost all of them were favoring the same sort of thing. So there wasn't surprise in that. But there was another aspect to this which hasn't been covered much, which is chapter 5, rather, in the final document, which talks about the new ways of synodal conversion. And this really does open the way to quite a transformation, if it comes to fruition, transformation in the way the church is structured. It would become much more of a sort of synodal church, but by that they seem to mean very much changing the hierarchical structure of the church and making it much more of a level playing field, and really sort of giving the laity a lot more say, but also sort of decentralizing it to the point where a lot of issues will be dealt with at a sort of diocesan and regional level, and that could change the church quite significantly. And it doesn't talk about just the Amazon. It talks about the church with an Amazonian face could take on these characteristics. So it sort of goes beyond the church, but with what they call an Amazonian face. So it'll be interesting to see just how much that gets into the Pope's final document.
And really, Edward, this reminds me of the so-called synodal path, I think it was, that Cardinal Marx has described and has been pushing for in Germany. Is this part of the same thing?
Well, it's the same sort of structure that they're looking at. And what the emphasis is on is a sort of listening to the people. The people of God is a phrase that comes up a lot now under this pontificate. And it's all about how they say is sort of listening to what the people want and taking it, taken the lead really from them, and it's what the Pope calls an inverted pyramid. So you have, instead of a sort of top-down approach, you have a bottom-up approach. But people have criticized this. They say it's a Protestantization of the church. It's a sort of leveling down. And somebody even told me yesterday he thought it was what seemed to be a sort of Sovietization of the church.
Oh, gosh,
it's very
wow.
much a sort of what he thought was a sort of rather communist sort of structure, where it's all seems to be from the people, but in fact it's very much an elite that is running it.
You know, this this is something you've written about in the past. I think it at least it's connected to decentralization, you know. So this is the idea, as you said, that instead of Rome, the Vatican deciding certain things, we see this with communion for the divorce, for example. There have been the allowance of certain dioceses to make that decision on their own. And so there's this decentralization on various levels. And again, here we see it with Pope Francis. I actually hope, Edward, this may be something you write more on in the future, because there's a lot here. Before we're out of time, what did Pope Francis have to say about the final document? What can we expect from him? Did he sort of telegraph any of that in his final remarks?
No. I mean, he did say he hopes to finish it by the end of the year, which would be unusually quick, but I think it's that would be quite interesting if he does that. I think one aspect he did say in his closing address, which I thought was interesting, he did say that this final document is basically a sort of diagnostical document. It provides a diagnosis of the problems and what needs to be done, but he said it shouldn't really be expanded universally. And I think it'll be interesting to see just what he says and how much he backs these proposals and how much he really or shows some sort of concern about them and puts some brakes on them. But that's basically what he said in his closing remarks. And he also said he would create he'd like to create a sort of bishops conference or bishops council for the region, which would cover the whole Amazonian region, and put in a department within the dicastery for promoting integral development, which will be dedicated to the Amazon. So those were things that he mentioned in his closing address.
Very interesting. Well, Edward, thank you for all of your reporting during this month. When the Synod met, I know it's a lot. It seems like the world converged on Rome, and you have to find your way through it all. But I appreciate what you've done. So keep it up.
Sure. Good to be with you, John.
When I'm come back, I'm joined by Father Carter Griffin to discuss why celibacy. This is Register Radio. More when we return.
There's nothing like EWTN's National Catholic Register. Revealing, engaging, inspiring. The most comprehensive news of the day from a Catholic perspective, with the moral authority that comes from being faithful to the teachings of the Catholic Church. And in the words of our founder, Monsignor Matthew Smith, a paper that will always be loyal to the Church and has no selfish axe to grind. Because the truth when the Register was founded in 1927 is still the truth today. The award-winning National Catholic Register helps readers engage the culture with confidence in the saving and sanctifying gospel of Jesus Christ. Get 6 free issues today by ordering online at ncregister.com/radio or call 800-421-3230 and mention code RADIO. That's 800-421-3230 and mention code RADIO. The National Catholic Register. Read faithfully.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back. I'm Jeanette DeMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register. We have been discussing in this show the proposition in the final document of the Amazon Synod that requested that Pope Francis consider married priest for the Amazon region itself, of the Amazon region alone. Joining us now to talk about the priesthood, celibacy, and marriage is Father Carter Griffin. He's a priest of the Archdiocese of Washington, D.C., where he is rector of the St. John Paul II Seminary. Father Griffin was raised a Presbyterian. He converted to Catholicism while attending Princeton University. Recently, he penned the book, Why Celibacy? Reclaiming the Fatherhood of the Priest It was published by Emmaus Road Press in 2019. Father Griffin, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jeanette. Good to be with you.
Thanks. So recently, the Amazon Synod concluded. In the final document, there was a request for the married priesthood in the Amazon region. The request was rather vague, though. What did we find in this document?
Well, the working document, or the document that is being sent to the Holy Father for consideration in his own post-synodal exhortation, asks that he consider ordaining priests that are, as the document says, suitable and esteemed men of the community who have had a fruitful permanent diaconate and receive adequate formation for the priesthood. So it is a the consideration seems to be, as you said, it's a little bit vague, and perhaps would be specified more clearly in the final document if the Holy Father accepts it. Would be to have permanent deacons who are happily married with a stable family life, and who have had a suitable time in the permanent diaconate to be considered for holy orders to rather to the priesthood.
And so, really, we're waiting on the Holy Father to. To decide where he wants to go with this. This is just a recommendation, and there's a lot that needs to be worked out. The next step that the different dicasteries or the different congregations at the Vatican have to advise the Holy Father at where to go with this. So I think we're most likely going to be expecting that as the Holy Father prepares his exhortation on this. You know, I invited you to speak about this mostly because you have written a book. This summer it was released, Why Celibacy, as I mentioned in the introduction. This book, though, you haven't just started thinking about this year. This book has really been long in the works. Why publish it now?
Yeah, you're right. It's been germinating for a long time. I wrote my dissertation about nine years ago now on celibacy and supernatural fatherhood of priests. I've been in seminary formation almost that entire time since then. So have learned a lot sort of on the ground, as it were, in terms of formation. But really what I think was the final catalyst for me was just seeing the two things, the devastation caused by this new, as I heard it called last night, this new iteration, you know, of the sexual abuse crisis that we're all reeling from, all of us are reeling from, and recognizing certainly not seeing that approach to the priesthood or that kind of abuse of the priesthood in myself or in so many priests that I know, and wanting to get the word out there that there are so many good faithful priests who are living their spiritual fatherhood well, living their celibacy as a way of living spiritual fatherhood. And wanting to kind of articulate that more clearly. So I think that was on the one side. And on the other side, seeing in so many faithful Catholics starting to lose confidence in this perennial teaching and this beautiful teaching about celibacy, which began from Jesus himself, his own lived life, and the words that he gave about eunuchs for the sake of the kingdom, the early Christian understanding of celibacy or perpetual continence, and just hoping that this new moment that we're living through right now, which has a lot of kind of chiaroscuro, a lot of dark and a lot of light at the same time, doesn't cause us to make a mistake and lose this precious gift. So I think those were the two reasons that made me want to write the book.
Sure. So, I mean, taking those two reasons of what you really see, you know, the scandal has caused doubt, you know, in people's minds that celibacy is possible. You know, for anyone. I mean, the scandal hasn't been the only cause of that doubt. I think the sexual revolution caused that doubt that celibacy or chastity is possible. And that now, I think, does creep into the minds of faithful Catholics. So what is your response to them that it is indeed possible?
Well, I think you make a number of really great points there. I mean, first of all, this is not happening in a vacuum. It's happening in an entire cultural and societal movement away from a traditional or classical understanding of the human person and human sexuality, a real skepticism about our capacity to live that, as you said, not just celibacy, but even chastity. You know, the feeling that chastity alone, of course, which every Christian, every human being is called to, learn how to use the precious gift of sexuality, first of all, being men and women, but also sexual relations and using them in appropriate, healthy, life-giving ways. And I think there's just a real sense that that in itself is something that we no longer trust ourselves to live. And if one is not able to live that or see one's way to live that in his own life, then how can someone go an entire life without having any sexual relations whatsoever? You know, it just sort of seems to be something beyond the pale to many people, which, you know, historically was it's a kind of a new moment in that sense, too, because there have always been people who have given up marriage for all kinds of reasons, good reasons and maybe not so good reasons, but natural reasons as well as spiritual reasons. And it was just always understood that there would be some who wouldn't get married and would live perfectly happy and fulfilled lives, that sex is clearly not a biological human need, not a spiritual need, not a psychological need, not an emotional need. And we know many people who engage in far too much in the sense of sexual relations and are not living happy, fulfilled, mature lives. And so it's really a question of, first of all, understanding who we are as human beings and how to live chastity well. And when that happens, and I think we're much in a better position to understand how celibacy can be lived well, because I firmly believe, and I know it has been a beautiful gift in my life and the life of so many other priests as a way of living their spiritual fatherhood. And I think that's what we need to get back down to, which incidentally also yields all kinds of other fruits, which we may want to get into right now or not, but an understanding that everybody is called to live this kind of spiritual fatherhood and motherhood for that matter.
Absolutely. So let's talk about, I mean, the subtitle of your book is Reclaiming the Fatherhood of the Priest. And of course, priests are called father. And yet it isn't physical flesh and blood children that you beget. It's spiritual children. So why is it so important to cling to this idea or this gift of fatherhood in order to truly embrace celibacy?
Because I think that before we can understand celibacy, we need to understand that spiritual fatherhood and motherhood is something to which every human being is called. That St. John Paul II said that a sign of maturity, spiritual maturity, is this capacity to give life in the order of grace. And that we're all called to do that through our baptismal vocation. And we all give life in lots of different ways. Single people do, married people do, and obviously celibate people do. And when we get that, then we see that the gift of celibacy for those who receive that gift, which is not everyone, but those who receive that gift are being given this opportunity to live out their fatherhood, in the case of a celibate priest, to live out his fatherhood in such a way that he focuses his entire life on living that kind of highest level of fatherhood, which is spiritual fatherhood. Which, if we understand that to be something universal, so say a natural father, certainly fathers children and brings them into the world and raises them and hopefully makes them good citizens and you know, virtuous and all the rest of it. But a Christian father knows that his job doesn't end there. But in fact, the most important job that he has is to help them get to heaven and to make them spiritual brothers and sisters of his. And he gives them life in the order of grace through his prayers, through his sacrifice, by setting a good example, bringing them to the sacraments, teaching the faith, all kinds of things that he does as a priest of his family. And the mother certainly does the same thing in her own way with spiritual motherhood. And so if we see that as something that is all-encompassing that everybody is involved in, then we see the gift of celibacy of focusing on that highest level of fatherhood. And then we can sort of see the beauty of it at that point.
So can you paint the picture, I mean, just very descriptively, please, of what the spiritual fatherhood is in your own life. What does that look like?
Yeah, great question. There are a lot of different ways to break it open. The one way that I found that I did in the book and that is helpful for me is to understand that we all share in this case, in the priesthood of Christ, and that he gave life he was a spiritual father himself par excellence. And he gave life as traditionally is understood as priest, prophet, and king. So he's giving life by his sacrifice, pouring out his blood on the cross primarily, and all that flows from that, and namely the whole life of this of spiritual grace. He gives life as a prophet, that is to say, in his teaching and revealing the Father and revealing the good news, and as king, as helping us govern us, leading us towards heaven. And a priest does the same things. He focuses his fatherhood is focused through being a priest, prophet, and a king, and the sacrifice and above all in the Holy Eucharist, in being a prophetic voice and in his preaching and his teaching, and also in guiding his people in the way of life, in the way of holiness. And that third way is, I think, the way where celibacy perhaps is most shows itself most clearly as a paternal kind of charism. Because to lead someone into the way of life, it seems to me, is primarily sort of, It's what a father does in a natural order as well. He provides for his family. He protects his family, and he kind of teaches them, you know, and he teaches them in virtue and so forth. And all three of those things the priest needs to do as well. He provides for his family with the bread of life, with an identity as spiritual children of God. He teaches them through preaching of the gospel, and he protects them. And celibacy enables him to protect in a very unique way, because without sort of the responsibilities to a natural family, he is hopefully able to give himself in a way that is truly self-sacrificial, even to the point of shedding his own blood if necessary, for the sake of his children and helping them, you know, protecting them from all the different ways that the evil one is trying to ensnare people today. So I think celibacy is something that, first of all of those ways of living spiritual fatherhood, every priest shares in. And as a celibate, one is enabled to do so in a particularly powerful way. To take the example of preaching, this is actually where Thomas Aquinas identifies one of the great roles of celibacy. He says that celibacy is ordered to contemplation, and that contemplation overflows into preaching, right? So that the man who is celibate is able to, not only with the time, but also with kind of the emotional space and the spiritual space, is able to hopefully live his life, an interior life, in such a way that he grows in his knowledge of God, and that pours forth in his own preaching.
Father,
you know that. Yeah, please.
I hang on every word that you say. it's so enriching, honestly. And it's every time I talk to you, I'm hang on these words. And we're already out of time, but I want to invite our listeners who've probably done the same thing, just received this hope from you about the priesthood, to read this book and to hang on those words in the book itself. So the book is Why Celibacy? Reclaiming the Fatherhood of the Priest. You can find it at stpaulcenter.com. You can buy it from Emmaus Publishing there at stpaulcenter.com. Father Griffin, as always, thank you so much for sharing your fatherhood with us here at the Register.
It's a joy to be with you. Thank you so much.
Remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. Thanks for joining us here on Register Radio on EWTN. For Matthew Bunsen and our producer, Jeff Burson, I'm Jeanette DeMello. Until next week, God bless you.